Didn't know what was happening there.
Yeah.
And I guess it's a happy birthday to you.
Oh, nice.
It is. Thank you.
Birthday.
Well, I'm in the future here, so.
True.
By one day.
So was it yesterday then?
No, it's my birthday here. So
okay.
You're still
okay.
Right.
Yeah. It's happy birthday.
It's the 28th.
To him now
which isn't
and
quite.
Tomorrow.
Well, how long do you have today, Nathan?
I'm fine with time. I think the bigger issue is when you guys want to sleep. So.
Okay.
It's a bit late on your end.
True. Well, I'm used to staying up to midnight, so.
Yeah.
Don't know
yeah.
about the other guys.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Peter Pixie, and you're listening to Comic Pop Library.
To another episode of Comic Popcorn Movies brought to you by Comic Pop Library. I'm Richard along with
Lenny,
Jonathan,
Jacob,
and Logan.
And we are joined today. I can't even talk. It's late, Nathan. We are joined today. Good Lord. I did not drink before I came here.
We are
here,
joined together in holy matrimony.
Really? We are joined today by Nathan M. Ferrugia, the author of the Fifth Column in Helix series. Nathan, thank you for coming back on with us today.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And we will be getting into some of Nathan's stuff here after a while. The main thing we wanted to kind of have fun with, he joined us last year for The Force Awakens. He's joining us again for Rogue One this year. It's now available for purchase on DVD. It's been that way for about roughly a month now. And this is when we kind of like to do our reviews or as soon as we can. But because of Nathan's gallivanting and globetrotting and ours ins and outs, this is when we were able to get together. So,
yep.
We're glad to have you on again, Nathan.
Thank you.
Jacob's the one that wanted to do Rogue One. So do you want to kind of give a brief synopsis, or do you need me to print off you a synopsis? Or
no, I could probably try. I'll try and swing it from memory.
Okay.
So
rip it off.
Rogue One is it's a standalone Star Wars story, not to be confused with the saga movies, which always feature someone in the Skywalker family. And it centers around Jyn Erso, who's played by Felicity Jones, and Cassian Andor, who's played by Diego Luna, as they meet up and they are attempting to track down Jyn Erso's father, whose name is Galen Erso, who's played by Mads Mikkelsen of the Hannibal TV series fame. I believe he played Hannibal.
He did.
And they're also joined on this little journey by K2SO, Cassian's droid, who's played by Alan Tudyk. I have no idea how to pronounce his last name.
That's probably pretty close.
And along the way, they meet up with some other people named named Chirrut Imwe, who's played by Donnie Yen, who is of the Ip Man film trilogy. I think he was in three of those. Mm-hmm. And then
out of three. Three out of three.
They made a fourth one, but he's not in it.
Huh. Classic work for a trilogy.
But and then Baze Malbus, who is played by Wen Zhang. And the whole point of this is they're trying to find Galen Erso, who is one of the chief architects of the Death Star.
Hurrah.
And this takes place almost right before Star Wars Episode 4.
So he works on the actual Death Ray, the gun with the crystals, right? That's what he does.
Yep.
And that's why he's so important.
And you forgot at least one crew member.
At least one, but many, actually.
Yeah. We're not counting the...
You talk about the pilot?
The pilot.
Yeah, there is a defector pilot that joins their crew.
I remember him,
but I don't remember his name.
Bodhi Rook.
Sure.
Bodhi Rook.
He was obviously not that important to me.
Well, I never knew his name other than Pilot Guy, and he's one of my favorite.
They always called him the pilot. That's all through the movie, they call him the pilot.
Well, what did you think of this one? Last time we kind of had a iffy feeling about Force Awakens, but Nathan, since you're the special guest, we'll let you go first, and then we'll kind of chime in. What did you think about this one?
Oh, look, I'm pleased to say with Rogue One, I absolutely loved it.
Aha.
I mean, the problems that I had with the Force Awakens was that it was a great movie as a Star Wars fan, but I don't think it was as accessible to a new audience as Rogue One was. And I think Rogue One did a lot of things right. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think the screenwriter for it was or at least one of them, if there was more than one writer, was the writer for the original Bourne, Jason Bourne series, which I was quite excited about, and to see how he would go writing a Star Wars screenplay. So yeah, I loved it. I have really very little to say bad about it, to be honest. What about you guys?
Well, Jacob, it's your movie. How about you? We'll let you go next as your overall opinion. Then we'll start nitpicking.
Oh, I thought it was pretty fantastic. It makes me feel a lot better about the upcoming Han Solo movie, because I was worried that like Rogue One and the upcoming Han Solo and the rumored Boba Fett movies were just going to be nothing but cash grabs. And they basically, Disney's like, hey, we can put the name Star Wars on anything, and we're gonna make $500 million on it. And that's not what this movie was. I mean, if you take out what I like most about this movie is if you take out the Star Wars references, like let's say they're not going after the Death Star, and there's no Darth Vader in it. It could be a standalone movie by itself.
Right.
It actually tells a story, which I enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
Just had a lot of fun extras in it.
Yeah, if you're a Star Wars fan, especially the final space battle, has a lot of stuff to like.
Yeah. Jonathan, you're overall. I'll go last since... Oh, Jonathan.
Pass.
Pass, wow.
He has watched it.
Sorry. Your phone is not going to survive this night, is it?
Look how cracked it is.
Wait, then what fell just now?
It was just a clip.
Magnet.
Oh.
A magnet.
I thought that was your phone.
I didn't magnetize magnets when I get near them. They just fall apart.
Slogan, what about you?
I'm the anti-magneto.
I liked it quite a bit, but the one thing that I thought was particularly off was he was going to snipe her father initially, then he was going, maybe not, then he, I think, was thinking about sniping the commander, or I just wished he was thinking about sniping the commander. I'm not sure. I can't remember.
You just want somebody to die.
Well, if he's going to shoot someone, don't shoot the guy who's clearly getting executed for treason against the Empire. Shoot the commander who's telling the people to shoot the guy for treason. Okay. Why not? So, I can't remember if he was honestly thinking about doing that or if I just wished he was, but he had decided fairly well not to actually kill
We feel you. Yeah, that part was...
What about you, Lynn?
So then she got pissed at him bringing the sniper, her rifle, over there. Anyways, that's one of the few ways he could have actually saved her dad, if not for that strike that had been called out because they had been inhuman.
True. And we'll get into that a little bit, too, about some of the finer things. So, but you liked it in general overall?
Yeah.
Okay. Lenny, you probably the most one that watched it recently.
I watched it just now.
There you go. That's really fresh.
Yeah. I think that, like Jacob was saying, that it is definitely a great standalone movie. And I think that what they did in this movie, the big thing that I like the most about it is they dared to show you a darker side of the rebellion. They took it out of the black and white cookie cutter, stormtrooper, stormtrooper, stormtrooper bad, Rebel good. And I really enjoy, and there's a lot of that. What Logan talked about specifically is one of the big moments that they really emphasize that. And the back and forth in that character, and they even discuss it on the shuttle afterwards. But there's so much of that, and because war is hell, and so no one comes out of a war clean and scot-free, you know what I'm saying? So that's my big opinion, and then we can move on to finer details.
And I was even mostly fine with him shooting the guy who had the injured leg in the beginning, too.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's not the problem. It's just he's clearly on your side and going to get executed anyways, and you're going to shoot someone anyways. Why not make it the person who it actually benefits you to shoot?
Yep. And we'll, like I said, we'll get there, so be patient. Me, overall, I enjoyed it. Loved it. It was more of a war movie than a fantasy movie, because really, when we look at Star Wars as a whole, you think of a space fantasy, even though it says Star Wars in the title. And it does have some war pieces in it, where this one really felt like from beginning to end, like you said, in a war movie. So that's what I enjoyed about it. To get into some of the particulars, we'll jump in. You were talking about Cassian Andor, Jyn Erso, and all those. So we'll get into that. To me, I thought Cassian was the Han Solo person of this movie. He was a little bit more darker, but they changed Han Solo. They tweaked him with the special editions to make him a little bit more likable. He didn't shoot first, where everybody knows he did. So really, Han Solo is a dark character and will do anything to survive. Where Cassian, he's pretty much placed in that situation on a daily basis because he's an intelligence officer. So in that regard, like Logan was saying about his operative, he killed him so he could get away. Yeah. So go ahead, Logan.
That's what I was saying.
It makes sense because he's got information. Any pieces of Cassian? And then also, why don't we go with Jyn? Whoever wants to jump in, Nathan, if you want to, or any of the other guys that have anything. How about you, Nathan?
One of the reasons I really enjoyed it, I think it was the gathering of a ragtag team, and they weren't Jedi, you know, they were just normal characters.
Except the guy who was basically a Jedi, except for not having a lightsaber.
You're talking about Chirrut?
Yep,
blind guy.
And I assume that he's like a Jedi monk, like he was a worshiper at the temple before they destroyed it. I assume that they don't really ever say. He just sits there and looks and he talks about the Force a lot. Maybe, but he wasn't actually a Jedi Knight, but he was like a monk.
An apprentice who never became a knight.
Because of the culling, He might have never, or he might have been and just didn't have a lightsaber, like you said. So it doesn't really reveal that.
And that's one of the big questions of the movie. So
he doesn't do any Force pushes or anything. It's just
no. But he does almost at the end walk through lasers and stuff. So what do you think, Nathan? Is Chirrut have some Jedi powers or none? And then we'll go to Jacob and see what everybody else thinks.
That's really hard to say, I think. But I do like that they took a very different approach to that character and didn't just make him an apprentice or a Jedi Knight or anything in that we're used to seeing in that hierarchy for Jedi in any way at all. And it was quite different, and it seemed like he had a different path and a different experience with it. But I'd agree that there's definitely some interaction. He's definitely having some sort of a meaningful connection to the Force there, for sure. And I think the reason why they didn't do it that way, in the traditional sense, is that he would end up with a very overpowered character for a team of rebels, and it just wouldn't have worked. So, I liked that it was a bit more from sort of the spiritual side with some martial arts as well. I kind of liked how that played out for that character, so I thought that was a good choice.
We actually got to see somebody, well, I guess Ray, who played Darth Maul, I guess he was a martial artist too, but it was kind of nice to see some martial arts. It's kind of nice because it's kind of cool. But what about you, Jacob? And then we'll move on. What about you with Chirrut? What did you think?
I think he's obviously Force sensitive, but there's a part in Empire when Luke and Obi-Wan are arguing back and forth because Luke's about to take off to Bespin, where he tells Obi-Wan that he's learned to feel the Force and to be guided by the Force, but Obi-Wan says he hasn't learned to control it yet. And so I think that with Chirrut, he's Force sensitive to the point that he can use the Force to move him around when the Force kind of wants him to, when he's fighting the stormtroopers, and then also at the very end, right before he dies, when he walks through a blaster fire. But that's about the end of it. I mean, because he's also able to pull off some shots with that bow caster thing that he has that a normal, that unless unless we're talking about Matt Murdock, he's not going to be able to, you know, he's not going to be able to a normal.
Well, he shot it like Luke shot into the Death Star. I mean, it was a total dream shot. He just used the Force.
Yep. And that's what I mean.
No way you could actually shoot that.
Right. And so that's kind of the way that I looked at him was he may have at one point started on the path and then, or he just is Force sensitive.
Yep. Okay. To move on to a different character, because I know Jonathan liked this character, and we'll get Lynn's reactions too, but K2SO, Cassian's partner in skullduggery. Yeah. What did you think of him?
I actually really, really enjoyed him. I liked the chemistry that he and Jin kind of had. I mean, it wasn't a very good chemistry, but it was chemistry. There was some reaction to it, to where it made it almost comedical.
Oh, definitely. It was. I think that was a big deal about him. But
yeah. So the droids have always been the comic relief, or the. I mean, I guess they attempted with Jar Jar Binks, but the droids have always pulled it off, and that's always been one of the funnest things about Star Wars. That, you know, the droids are so much fun. BB-8 was the cute one, you know, and they've all had kind of their point. What is this with K2? They call him K2 sometimes. Yeah. I guess his real name's K2SO, but
and his previous and or future incarnation is Kato.
Kato? Okay.
Well, anyway, Kato, I guess we can call him, works for me. Yeah, he has the more like dark, sarcastic humor. Yeah. It's like he said, it's like he's pulling off comedy. He's not being funny. And I don't think any of the droids are ever being funny. They're being droids. And it's funny because they're droids. And like he turns to them and says, "And we'll all die in the vacuum of space. Well, not me. Because I can survive in space." Yeah. So it's that, you know, he's like the Bill Hicks of all space droids. He's definitely more, and he kind of reminds me of R2-D2, because R2-D2 was also very sassy.
Yeah.
He didn't have a voice, but he was the sassiest little droid. Definitely. Yeah.
Well, not the sassiest big droid. Not as much
But
as
also,
sassy
I
as BB-8.
Also had an opinion about the last guy, just real quick, and it won't take very long, but I kind of agree, but I think that it's definitely, like, I know that this guy was, to me, there's a lot of pandemonium going on in this galaxy at this time. There's a lot of, you know, I think it might be illegal to be a Jedi. The temple's already been destroyed and they're harvesting it. So I think he was a Jedi and maybe he was already injured. And I think he was probably pretty prominent or very important monk at that temple. And he at one time probably did wield a lightsaber. And I think that's what his stick is like, it's his lightsaber. And I think that the fact that he can, I mean, you talk about he doesn't do Force pushes, but it's like Jacob said, he moves himself with the Force constantly. I mean, he takes a blind shot at a TIE fighter 400 yards away and flying. I mean, and hits it. So, like, yeah, that was either a total accident or there is a Force, and that guy could control it. It wasn't, he didn't do anything on accident, and he says it in the movie. So, his level, if you understand how Jedi's view the Force, his level of understanding and trust in the Force makes him a Jedi Master. Whether he was trained or not, he was already so in tune with the Force that he literally was walking through a whole crowd of stormtroopers, beating them with a stick down. You know, like he beat them all. You know, so it's like, yeah, that he's obviously a Jedi Master to me. Whether he doesn't carry a lightsaber and doesn't call himself a Jedi Master is because I think it's because of the time. It's because, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi hasn't come out of hiding. Luke Skywalker is still unknown. You know, the Rebels pretty much think they've lost. They have a Death Star, for Christ's sake.
There's one other reason he might have called himself a Jedi. He didn't actually control the Force. He just paid attention to it.
And that's an interpretation. That's kind of what Jacob was saying, too. So,
well, I mean, but at the highest level, what I'm saying is that exactly that. A true Jedi doesn't control the Force because he's detached. He knows that the Force will guide him where he needs to go.
Yeah. And that's one of the debates with Chirrut, whether he's actually... he's a little bit Force sensitive, but they don't know what level he actually was, because no one has ever said. The only thing that I think ever has been brought out, that he was a guardian of the wheels, and that's basically the old texts of the Jedi.
Yeah, and they don't let just any guy guard that, I'm sure. So he's obviously somebody. I mean, it doesn't really matter whether he's a monk or a knight. He's clearly in the temple of the Jedi. I mean, you know, like, so...
True.
Yeah, he's definitely one of them, you know, in some capacity.
We'll move on to the lead of the story. This one has a female lead, Felicity Jones with Jyn Erso. For me, I thought she did a decent job. They said they went and reshot some of her scenes, that she was a little too wooden in her scenes or a little bit unsympathetic. So they tried to soften her up, and they said the saving the child was supposed to try to soften her up, that she cared for people. But still, to me, it still looked like, you know, she was a outcast. She grew up in a harsh place too, where I kind of felt like
under a rock.
That's yeah literally almost.
and then I thought one of the hyper militant rebel bands afterwards.
True. And she was with,
and then he put her back under the rock.
Who was Forrest Whitaker's character?
Saw Gerrera.
Saw Gerrera. So you can see why she would be such a stoic person.
And
so
I'm sorry, but is that not a blatant like reimagining of Che Guevara? I mean, come on, the person, like the way he acts, and then also the destined to be a martyr guy, and like the name is Saw Gerrera. Really, like they didn't even think like change the last name by a letter.
But he's also, it's also,
he did have the Vader breathing tech.
Yeah, that was awesome. It like showed that other people use that same breathing technology.
Cool.
It made the exact same noise. I was very thrilled by that.
So those as a team, do you think the way she acted it, being a little bit more stoic, Nathan, was the way she should have been? I mean, to me that fit, but what about you?
I mean, I wasn't really bothered with her character per se, because it is her character. I think it could have benefited from, I think one of the issues was also a very, very sort of late love interest in the story, which was, you know, the leader of the group. What was his name?
Cassian?
Yeah. So, he didn't really come into it as a character for me until quite late in the movie. And I think that's probably the one thing that, you know, if you could change anything, I would have had his interaction with her develop a little bit more, because he would be the character she's more likely to open up to, I think. And that's really the only way we're going to get to know her a little bit better. And, you know, creating these scenes where we make her more sympathetic just aren't really going to work with that type of character until she begins to trust someone a little more. So, yeah, I think that came a bit late in the movie. And we got a little bit of it toward the end. And I think that's probably where I was more on board with her and with Cassian as well. And until then, they were very distant, you know, like you were saying, very distant, isolated characters, right, who were, you know, very much in their own head, I think. And it was really hard for us as the audience to access them early on. But, you know, we still got there in the end. It just wasn't probably as much as we would have wanted.
Hey, what speaks to your heart than trying to kill your dad? We'll actually go into Logan's debate here.
That scene that she was pissed at him for bringing a rifle to spy on the Empire place seemed a bit odd to me, because the other people kind of tipped her off that he might be going after her dad instead. But
yeah, and that's why she went to the main base.
Actually, spying on the Empire base with a rifle, that sounds like good sense to me. You might not be planning on shooting anybody, but just in case you have to.
Yeah, but he was under orders to assassinate him, though.
She never actually got that information. She just said he might be looking to kill her dad from the other crew.
From K2SO, yeah. K2 mentioned it, that he took the rifle. What about you, Jacob? What did you think about that interaction, especially when they came back? When the debate in the shuttle, as they're taking off, about, you were wanting to kill my dad, and he was like, hey, that's war. What did you think, it came across?
I didn't have too much of a problem with it. Because I was, the whole time, or, you know, basically for most of the movie, I was sitting there saying in my head, please don't force some kind of twisted love story down my throat, because this is about stealing the planets to the Death Star, and we hear about none of these people anywhere else. So the chances that they're getting off of that, you know, that the chance they're getting out of this movie alive is not good.
True.
And so, you know, and that's the problem with a lot of movies nowadays, is that there's always got to be some kind of love interest, love story. And so that was my, like, in my first watching, I was like, please don't do that. And then they didn't, and it was okay.
What about the light indication of a romance at the end? That
still, it wasn't enough to wasn't piss him off.
They were killed, hey.
Well, and
we just fought and bled, and we succeeded. We are happy.
Well,
we're
even in a lot of those movies, they would still, like, at that point, they'd have them share a kiss or whatever, and they didn't. They hugged and walked out and got blown up by nuclear Death Star fire.
Yeah, we succeeded. Now we're going to go watch this nice sunset of death.
Oh, yes.
And it was kind of odd how they time delayed the space and ground-based portions of that and the previous scenes, but yeah, it worked, so yay.
Yeah, it worked. One thing I'll mention, I'll get Lynn's reaction, then Nathan's, and if Jonathan wants to react, and anybody else, whoever, but the introduction of Darth Vader and his sachet coming down out of his room, I was kind of like, there's a little bit more hip action than I remember Darth Vader having before. What'd you think about that, Lynn?
I don't know that I really noticed the movement that much. I noticed that they use very little of him, and so I guess I just wasn't paying that close attention to how he walked. But originally, in the original movies, he was very stiff, wasn't he? And I don't know that they thought that maybe him being so robotic, he would be more. And then now they're thinking, you know, he's probably, because the androids have quick movements, and the robots. And
General Grievous.
Exactly, yeah. So there's that. So there's been a lot of changes since the original, so maybe they were just trying to show that he was still humanoid. He did still have a body in there. But, I thought it was cool that I knew the guy that was in the suit. So that was fun. I mean, I've met him. I don't know him personally, but he definitely, I could see the actor doing it with that swagger. I could imagine him without the suit practicing it. But like I said, I just met him once. But the use of Darth Vader in this movie was minimal, and I like that it wasn't overcrowded with, there was General Governor Tarkin, but you don't see the Emperor. And you see very little of the Rebel Alliance Council. No. So I think it was pretty cool that it was mostly about... I always think about, like, the guy that, like, fixed the doors whenever they open and close real fast when one gets jammed. Like, who's the janitor on the Death Star that has to go fix those doors? Like, there's so... Like, I wonder what about those stories, about those common stories, because it's so epic. Mm-hmm. It's so over-the-top epic, I think... Okay, me in this world, I'm probably not going to be Luke Skywalker. Like, everyone thinks they're Luke Skywalker or they're Han Solo. I'm probably not even Chewbacca. I'm probably, like, one of the Ewoks. But most likely, I'd work on the Death Star that got blown up. And I'd probably be the guy that had to fix those doors. You know how fast they open? Like, any mechanical part that moves that fast is going to eventually hit a tiny little infarction and then,
true,
you know, gonna have to be repaired. So, but that's my opinion, is that he was cool. It was very little bit, and maybe they wanted to give him as much flair as they could, since they barely used him.
So we're just concentrating on the intro right now. The end we got saved for later. That's a piece all on its own. What did you think, Nathan, about the introduction of Mustafar and Vader in this movie?
I didn't notice the swagger, for starters. It was not where my attention was. It's actually probably one of my favorite parts of the movie is the very end. And it's just such an unusual ending for a movie, and it's also something that we just don't expect. I mean, for one, how the entire story ends, even though we know how it's going to end to some degree.
The thing is, you can't not expect it. It's weird because, like, you don't expect it, but you can't not expect it because you already know what happened to these people. Princess Leia said it in the first 5 minutes of the very first Star Wars movie.
But you don't know the lead-up.
Yeah, I know.
Don't know how they got there.
Well, I realized that. I mean, it was still a good story to tell. I'm just saying... You do know how it ends. It ends the same way it ends for everyone, eventually.
Kevin in the Woods had a similar ending, though less successful, and not actually knowing it from the get-go.
It's weird that you would go there from there, to Cabin in the Woods.
That, they pretty much all die in the end unless those two are really miraculous.
True. That is true. But what about the ending, since we jumped to the ending? Nathan, if you want to go on with more of the ending, and then we'll let Jonathan jump in.
It was really great to see an ending like that, for starters, but also what was even better was the Darth Vader stuff at the very end, which came out of nowhere. It wasn't, for me anyway, it wasn't something that I expected, and it was just really confronting and really well shot. So I enjoyed that sort of little minor rampage at the end, or attempted rampage. I thought that was fantastic, and it left me breathless. I thought that was really, really well done. And it's something that, I don't think many filmmakers would think to add to a story like that. So I think it really speaks to the writers of Rogue One that they put that in there at the end. Because we didn't need to see Darth Vader doing that. We didn't need to see the princess there. But the way that they did that was really, really entertaining. And it was still, crucial to the story as well. So I love that very ending, as well as the ending for the ragtag team on the planet.
Jonathan, you want to go next, then we'll hit Jacob.
Okay. When I first saw Darth Vader, it was kind of exciting for me. I was like, I didn't even know he was gonna be in this film, but he'd have to be because it's a film about the Death Star. Right. And then the ending of it, I was like, oh, it's another It's another Kylo Ren throwing a fit.
Well, he wasn't throwing a fit.
But
he was decimating people.
Yeah, but it's just like, I don't know if they were
the plans.
But definitely grandson, like grandfather.
To a degree. I mean, I think as Darth Vader, he was a little bit more controlled than when he was Anakin. So I think he got a little bit more control. To me, that's just me. But Jacob, well, let's get your opinions of the ending. But then I also want to say, with that ending, since we've kind of mentioned Leia, go into the trickery that they use with Leia, and as Lynn mentioned, Governor Tarkin, and then we'll jump back to Nathan on that topic as well. But the ending, what did you think?
Well, I have to respectfully disagree with Nathan on this. He said that we didn't need to see Vader at the end. I most definitely did need to see Vader end some people. The thing that was the best, I mean, just besides watching him just ransack people, which is wonderful, we finally got to see why everyone in the Rebellion and everyone in the galaxy is terrified of this guy. Because you always hear, you always hear about, Lord Vader, oh no, this is bad, we don't want him around. But then in 4, 5, and 6, you never really got to see how just vicious he could be. Yeah, he betrays Lando and, freezes Han, but, you never see, what he is actually capable of. Why would we not stand up to this guy? And that showed us why.
True. Definitely, definitely. And let's get into Leia and Governor Tarkin and the effects and camera trickery they did with that. We'll go with you, Jacob, then we'll jump to Nathan.
I thought it was fantastic. The first time I watched it, I didn't realize that they had just CGI'd Peter Cushing's face to the act. I mean, I realize it's not him because Peter Cushing is dead, but
for a while now.
Right.
Yeah.
But it looked, I couldn't tell that it was CGI'd until somebody's like, oh yeah, that's CGI'd, and then you start to kind of see the little things, like the mouth doesn't quite move right, but it's not noticeable until you go looking for it. And even then, right, it's not really noticeable with him. Now with Leia, it kind of was, but we're talking about 10 seconds with her as opposed to 8-9 minutes with Tarkin. And it was nice to see Tarkin get some more screen time, because he's another one of those guys that everyone was kind of afraid of because he's just ruthless.
Right. Yeah. True. What about you, Nathan? What did you think about the manipulated faces for the actors for Carrie Fisher and Peter Cushing?
I didn't have a problem with it at all, to be honest. I thought it worked. It was more noticeable, obviously, with the princess. But yeah, it was. I think it was pulled off enough for me to be happy with it. It wasn't, it wasn't a Jar Jar Binks scenario where you just cringed at the creation of the character and wished it was never there. So I think it was worthy of being included. And it was never, you know, it's never going to be as lifelike as a real character. And I think the audience and myself as the audience accepts that. But it was realistic enough that I was able to accept it in the story. So, yeah, it worked for me. No problems.
Okay. And that's the way I felt, too. I felt Leia's was the most felt rushed, maybe, because I don't know if they've shoehorned that in at the last minute, thinking, oh, we got to do this, too, or what happened. But it almost looked like she was more flushed than what she was in New Hope. You know, more pillar, not actually the... But maybe I'm remembering Star Wars differently, but... Let's see, what do we got here? I'm trying to think of where we want to go.
There's
my... Go ahead, Logan.
Favorite character, the pilot.
Okay.
He starts out betraying the Empire, getting tortured by...
Saw Gerrera and the Beast. And the,
yeah. What was it called?
Trip into Hentai? Is that what it's called?
I love that.
No, I think it's a D&D thing. Monster. Yeah. I'm not sure, though. I'm pretty sure that's awesome. A D&D monster, but I'm not sure. I'm
certain
what
it was blind.
Okay.
But yeah. And then...
I have to look up the name
after
of that.
He gets up and going and Schlong piloting them...
Something like that.
I can't remember if it was he or Cassian that got them through, but I'm pretty sure it was he that got them through the barrier initially.
It was the pilot that got them in.
Yeah,
well, and the fact that the code hadn't been changed. It was the pilot and the fact that the code, you know, worked.
And then he played games with all the deployments, too. That was awesome.
Yeah, mating diversions with the comms on the planet, Scarif, or the landing pad, whatever. Send troops for being overrun. So yes, he did do that. And that's Bodhi Rook is who you're thinking of.
Yep.
Yeah, he's the pilot.
Mm-hmm. And he was played by Riz Ahmed, excuse me. But yeah, he's kind of one that was kind of left. Him and Baz are kind of the two that are kind of more in the background, even though they're there, kind of in the background to me. So it's like, for some reason, I didn't notice them there as much, even though they had crucial parts.
Is Baz like the bigger guy?
Yeah, he's the one who had the heavy machine gun, basically.
And didn't
Gatling gun, Gatling laser gun.
I actually really didn't notice him that much until he died.
Until he died?
Yeah.
That's a good point.
At least he
didn't even then. Just borrow one of his guns to take down the... I can't remember. Was it a TIE fighter?
It was TIE fighter.
Yeah, TIE.
And it was his own... But it was some kind of crossbow thing. It's kind of like what Chewbacca used in The Force Awakens.
Very similar.
Yeah.
So what did you think about those two characters? Even Nathan, were they kind of more in the background of you, or did they kind of stand out for you?
Oh, they were all right. The one thing that I was hoping that they would do that they didn't do was with that sort of slug monster and the pilot. And I'm a bit hazy on this because it was a while ago, but I'm pretty sure the effects of that monster on the victim, when they were clearly outlined, I think it was some sort of brain degradation, or you would lose your mind or something
your
like
mind
that.
Was normally. That? Yeah. Yeah. Saw told him that... that he was probably going to lose his mind.
Yeah.
And but he didn't say for sure.
And no lies would be heard from
him. True. And and I was waiting for that to become a challenge that he would have to fight for the rest of the movie. And I thought, which would have been interesting, but it never surfaced, and he avoided that.
I think they let something slip there. I think that was one of the big if the only mistake they made with the film is, like, they could have had him be way crazier, and it would have still been like, and he could have still got all of his messages across, and everything could have went exactly the way it went, and he could have been a bloody lunatic, and that would have been fun. It shows him at first, he looks a little disturbed, but clearly he didn't lie to the slug, because the slug will eat your brain if you do. Because he was telling the truth, so that's possibly why he didn't lose his mind.
Well, he was pretty out of it until sometime during the Rebel base.
He was out of it for quite a while. Yeah. I mean, even after they were essentially rescued from the super rebels.
Yep. What I went to when you said he could have been crazier, well, crazy pilot, I went to Murdoch for the team.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, they could have done so much fun stuff with him, and really, maybe it had been too much. I don't know. I mean, they do kind of show a little bit of mental trauma after the slug, but I think that Nathan kind of pointed out that I kind of wanted to see a lot more of that, too, that mental trauma. I'd rather see mental trauma than people just getting killed. Getting killed's boring. like abusing their mind and raping the rest of their life. That's much more fun.
He was pretty awesome before he got killed.
Oh, yeah. And they all had their moments to shine.
And they could have just had him be tortured normally or something, but...
Yeah, I don't know.
That would have made the later events with him not being...
Crazy. And I kind of thought the slug was cute. Would you lose your mind if you, like, let the slug in? You're like, come here, little slug. I mean, it was blind, and it moved very slow. It was very fluffy, like... It
looked like a fluffy, like...
It looked like a big, slimy pillow. I just kind of wanted to lay on it.
Wow.
But I like slugs, so... That makes me, I guess, a bit weird.
I don't know if we all had that reaction, but
well, we're gonna take a break and then come back and talk about some of the cameos and stuff, but we're kind of running up on our time limits where I'm gonna have to kind of put everything together. But before we leave off, Nathan, we want to do this on the next part as well, but you're working on Helix currently. You're working on episode 6. Just to ask real fast before we close out, how's it going with episode 6?
Good. So there are, it's different length of series. So these are episodes, they're novella sized, which is about, you know, half the size of a novel. So more books, but smaller in size. And so there are 5 out so far, and I'm planning, there are 9 in the series. So as you said, 6 hopefully coming out very soon. I actually had to push it forward a little bit because my editor is so overworked with, which is good for the editor. Not so good for me.
Not so good for you, yeah.
Yeah, but that's all right. It's only a bit of a delay. So it looks like episode 6 will be out 1st of August. And if you're listening to this after then that's irrelevant. It will already be out.
You know how we work.
Yep. It takes a while.
Yes.
It's going to be August pretty dang soon.
Yep.
Yeah, not far at all. So I'm trying to get the rest of the episodes out this year, and I originally was pumping them out monthly late last year and quickly realized that's a lot of work. and trying to maintain that schedule is it's okay to – I can write that quickly, you know. Right. Because they're all plotted out already, I could write one a month, but then you have to go back and there are multiple stages of editing. And if you're juggling multiple books at multiple stages, you have no time to write. So suddenly all the future episodes were just put on hold until I got the first ones out. So it wasn't, I have to admit, it wasn't the most realistic schedule, and every month is, you know, probably not feasible. So I'm getting them out now before people get too impatient. So hopefully I'll be able to finish the Helix series this year.
Cool.
A little later than I thought, so, but better late than never.
There you go. So I've been enjoying them. I appreciate you allowing me to read through them. It's been hitting my sweet spot pretty good. I like the military fiction, so with that twinge of sci-fi, it's hitting me right in that sweet spot. So I've been enjoying them.
Well, that's good to hear.
If you want to catch up with Nathan, you can go to his website. It's his name, Nathan M. Farrugia. That's NathanM, as in Mary, FarrugiA.com. You can see his work from the Fifth Column series to his current Helix series. You can go to Amazon and various other vendors that are out there. And we'll have links to his webpage for sure. And his Facebook page, I think you've allowed us to do that in the past, your Facebook page. So you can keep up with Nathan and his ventures. And with this series, it's Alicia who's the main character, but it also has Sophie in there as well. So if you've been keeping up with him, keep up with the ladies as well. But we're going to take a short break, come back, and continue on with our conversation about Rogue One and get into some of the fun cameos that we've had and we're going to talk with. So, Nathan, thanks for being with us again.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And we're having fun. We hope everybody is out there having fun listening to us. We'll be right back. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any publisher, distributor, or studio, and it is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show hosts are their own and are not reflective in any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.